Hello, and welcome to the Donmar Warehouse's Climate Conversation series. My name is Claire Slater. I'm the head of new work at the Donmar, and I'm delighted to host this series of conversation between leading artists and leading climate and social justice thinkers. Our hope is that bringing these inspiring people together will help us all reconsider what it means to make theatre in the context of the climate crisis. Joining me today is Dawn King. Dawn wrote The Trials, the piece we're discussing today. She's an award-winning writer across theatre, film, TV, VR and radio, and her work is regularly performed internationally. Hi Dawn, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi.
I'm also joined today by Anjali Raman Middleton. She made national news by hacking road signs to highlight air pollution levels. She's an A-level student and co-founder of Choked Up, a campaign formed by black and brown young people to draw attention to the disproportionate impact toxic air pollution has on marginalised communities. And I'm also joined by Tolmea Gregory, who, alongside her climate justice activism, works as an artist. In 2018, at the age of just 17, she launched a collection of stickers on Giphy, which have now amassed over 10 billion views, enabling sustainable fashion messages to reach a global audience. She is also the host of the podcast Idealistically, so I'm feeling a little podcast hosting pressure today. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thanks.
Today, we're talking about Dawn's play, The Trials, which is opening tonight, the 16th of August, 2022, at the Donmar Warehouse. We'll talk about the play and the process of making it, and also about youth activism and the inspiration it gives us all to take responsibility for a brighter future. Dawn, I wonder if I could start with you.
Sure.
Could you please give us a brief synopsis of the play? And then tell us what inspired you to write it?
Yeah, The Trials is set 18 to 20 years into the future, and the younger generation is putting the older generation, i.e. us, on trial for the way that we behave during the climate crisis. And it's a jury of 12 young people, so 12 teenagers between the ages of 12 and 17, who decide whether the adult defendant's actions were justifiable or not.
Do you think this is what the future is going to look like, Dawn?
So The Trials is definitely a dystopian vision of a future which I hope never comes to exist. I've made a play, and part of having made it is that this future doesn't exist yet, and I really hope that it doesn't ever come to exist. So we're in the present now, and we can take action. So that's part of the reason that I wrote it, I suppose.
Natalie Abrahami, the director, and her whole creative team have worked really hard to find new and radical climate-careful ways of making this production. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Part of the challenge of the play for everybody involved in it, be that actors or the team or the theatre that's producing it, is that I suppose it's asking the question, in the future, when you look back on how you acted now, how are you going to feel about it? Will you feel like you did enough, or will you not feel like you did enough? So the Donmar has had to engage with that challenge, and they've done that really well. And we've been trying. It's called The Trials. We also were laughing that we're trialing so many things as part of it, and we're trying a more sustainable production method. We've been using the Theatre Green Book, and Natalie's idea, or the whole team's idea, is that we're trying to use as many reused things as possible, and the things which come in which are new, the idea is that they'll then be put into the theatre ecosystem and be able to be used again.
I understand that my colleagues here at the Donmar have been working really closely with Natalie and the team, but it's also been this brilliant opportunity for us to think differently about how we make theatre at the Donmar, where our materials come from, the way we use those precious resources of people, time and money, let alone the raw materials on stage, and how we use those really carefully. And we notice our habitual choices, and we make sure that we're always doing the most climate careful thing with every choice that we make. So I know there's been some really amazing learning on this show, and I'm really excited to see how that manifests itself in the future. So the jury that Dawn's play gives us, as you say, it's a jury of teenagers who are judging the older generation. So what we've done today, I'm really excited to have brought in these two incredibly inspirational youth climate activists to help us understand a little bit more about the climate activist picture at the moment. I actually wonder whether I could ask you, Anjali, and I'll come to you, Tolly, to actually describe your own activism.
So I'm a clean air activist, and I was kind of mobilised by the school strikes and by the air pollution in my area, and I wanted to start by focusing on my local community, the area I live in, and things I had a personal experience of, because I think it's hard to campaign on something that you haven't personally experienced. So I started campaigning on air pollution, and this tied very heavily into social injustice, as it is marginalised and private communities who live in the areas with most air pollution. So it very quickly became a social justice and climate campaign, talking about racial inequality, wealth disparity, and environmental racism as well within the environmental movement and within climate change and who feels the worst effects of it, because it's always going to be black and brown people, poorer people, women who are in the worst positions to address the climate crisis and who are most affected by it.
And what actions did you undertake to begin to address that super important issue?
I think it's hard starting out and realising what you actually want to do and how to address these issues, because they're just so massive. But what we did in my campaign Choked Up is we put up road signs in these areas that had the worst air pollution, and they said, breathing kills, pollution zone, people of colour are most affected by air pollution on them. And we put them up in these areas. We got a lot of media attention from them. It was part of a campaign around the London mayoral elections to get the candidates to adopt more aggressive clean air policies. And we were quite successful. So we managed to get meetings with the candidates. We talked to them about schemes such as the ULEZ, electric buses by 2030, maybe earlier. I would like them to be there by 2025, but we'll see what happens. And so we managed to get in these rooms, talk to politicians, and I think none of us expected to have as big an impact as we ended up having. We're still campaigning, although we have been on a bit of a hiatus with A-levels.
So you've done all of that around your A-levels.
Yeah.
Amazing. And am I right in thinking that you got your A-level results this week?
Yeah, on Thursday, yeah.
Well, good luck with that. You deserve to absolutely smash it, and I'm sure you will. Anjali, what was your reaction when you saw the trials?
So I think I had quite a strong reaction watching it. I was like, oh my God, am I doing enough now? Like, what could I be doing to try and improve this? It made me think about my own actions quite a lot. And I think that the role that youth activism is playing at the moment is, I think, maybe raising awareness. And I think that there is some policy work that young people are trying to engage in. So, for instance, I know some people in a campaign called Teach the Future who are trying to push through a bill at the moment about like climate education in schools. But I think the limited contact between government and young people makes this very hard for us to have that connection with the actual policy work. So I think a lot of what our work is revolving around at the moment, even if we don't want this to be the case, is raising awareness and getting people to make their own personal changes. But there are issues with this level of work, and I think that that was addressed in the play itself when it mentioned that like raising awareness isn't the same as actual policy action, and that people were limited by the government and the capitalist system that we were living in. People's own individual actions were not going to tackle that issue by itself.
And we talked a bit, didn't we?
Yeah.
Before this recording, about potentially the sort of danger of the rhetoric of, oh, we'll wait for the next generation to solve this, we'll wait for the young people to do all the work for us. Is that something that you come across in your work?
That is something that I definitely come across, and I think I, like a lot of other climate activists, find it quite frustrating when we're in these rooms and we're talking to people and they're like, oh, you're so inspirational. I wish that my generation was more like yours, but they actually don't change to try and be more like that and be more climate conscious. And I think something that came up a lot in this play was this idea of like climate anger. And I think at the moment we have a lot of climate anxiety, so people my age are extremely concerned and worried about the future, and this stops them from thinking about it because they don't want to imagine a future where they don't have the things that they have today. What I think this play did really well is it showed how climate anxiety and that fear about the future then turns into climate anger as people become more aware of what their lives are going to look like. And this anger manifests in this disconnect and this like hostility towards older generations who have ruined the lives of these young people. And I think that a lot of older people don't consider that today and consider how the fear and concern of young people will eventually turn into anger and frustration towards them, mm-hmm. towards our grandparents, towards our parents, as we realise that it's their fault that the world we live in is now inhospitable and that we aren't able to have the quality of life that we had dreamed of having. And I think that that's something that people need to think about more, because I think as soon as we start to clock that there will only be increased polarisation by climate change and it will only turn families against themselves as the younger people start to hate their parents for what they did and how they raised them and the lives that they were leading. And I think that it will start with young people having those conversations with their parents and their grandparents. But I just don't think we're there yet, because I don't think older generations have realised just how serious this is for people my age.
So Dawn's play, I guess, fictionalises a version of that future where these teenagers are now wholly responsible for judging the actions or inactions of the older generation. So that's an extreme example, but what you're encouraging us all to think about is what's the conversation we can have today that's honest and transparent and fair that can inspire change now?
Yeah, and I think it involves a lot of listening, because I think at the moment there's a lot of ignoring young people's voices mm-hmm. and viewing us as, I don't know, like too radical or unaware of how the world actually works, too idealistic. And I think that if we do want to tackle the climate crisis, we have to be idealistic and we have to be approaching these conversations in a frank way and not be afraid to have these difficult conversations.
That's really useful, actually, because that brings together quite a lot of threads of this whole podcast series. Often reflected how theatre is a good space mm-hmm. to help us have those difficult conversations, to help us imagine new ways of thinking about a more climate-careful future. Tolly, would you mind telling us a bit more detail about your own brilliant activism?
Yeah, sure. So I actually grew up wanting to be a fashion designer, send models down the catwalk, have my own shops. That was always the big dream. I actually started a fashion blog when I was 12, and basically within that, the years I was doing that, I started to uncover the horrendous impacts of the fashion industry that it has on both people and the planet. This was all in the aftermath of the Rana Plaza garment factory collapse in 2013, which happened in Dhaka in Bangladesh and killed over 1,000 garment makers. It basically just, that moment and learning about that basically like completely transformed my life and sent me down this very long journey of learning more about the climate and the climate crisis. And I very slowly came to terms with the fact that fashion, as much as I love it, like I wasn't needed in that space. Like I'm needed to raise awareness about the climate crisis to other young people. I'm needed to try and make my future more livable and more hopeful, more joyful. And so, yeah, I started getting more deeply involved within climate movement and organising in kind of early 2019. And then I was just kind of like, I have to do activism. Like, this is my thing. I didn't want to let go of kind of the creative side of my passion of fashion. So a lot alongside my kind of activism journey, I, as you already mentioned, like I fell into animation and gift sticker design as kind of like my job. But within my time as an activist, I've done many different things, whether it's kind of like organizing protests or, you know, attending kind of big demonstrations and stuff like that. I was previously part of Extinction Rebellion for quite a while, have since moved on and like doing more specifically art focused things and trying to get the conversation around imagination going and having more conversations about that again through my podcast Idealistically, which is where we discuss what we would idealistically want in an ideal world, because I don't think there is such thing as being idealistic when really at the end of the day we are just asking for a livable future, and that shouldn't be something that is too big of an ask.
It's really useful to hear the journey you've gone on, because I think it really enables other people to listen to this and think, oh, my position within this conversation can change. I'm not a fixed being and I can work towards my strengths.
And I think for me, like, sometimes it's good to just remind myself that it was a journey, and like, it kind of helps me give grace to other people. Like, it's not going to be an immediate thing that people are just going to suddenly go from like 0 to 100 on like how much they care about the climate. Like, it took me a long time. So I think it's a nice reminder for everyone that it, as much as we are facing, you know, a huge urgent issue, it won't just sink in instantly.
Your work, well, I'm really conscious actually of saying your work's really inspirational, because I totally heard what Anjali just said and how that is just a frustration. But I mean it with the greatest praise for both of you, actually. It genuinely is quite galvanising to hear about the work that you're both doing. Tomea, what would you encourage young artists like you listening to this conversation? What would you encourage them to do? Like, how can they turn their art form like you have into activism?
I think watching the play, obviously, like, the topic of art and its role kind of comes up within it. And I was kind of thinking, oh gosh, like, am I kind of using art as like an excuse to not do anything more serious? But then the play also highlights like how important art is to just our existence, and like how much joy it can bring, and how we wouldn't want to live life on this ridiculously magical planet if we didn't have things like music and theatre and just artwork, you know, like our houses and where we live and the spaces we live in. Like at time where we're recording, I'm in my flat and you can see all the art I have on my wall. Some of it I've made myself, and it's like, that brings me joy, just being able to live in a space that reflects who I am. And we don't want to get rid of that. And so I think we have to lean into art, even if it doesn't seem like it is world-changing. Something that I've come to realise, I've done a lot of different forms of activism. You know, I've done direct action, I've gone out into protests, I've stopped roads, things like that, all of which has been very empowering and I'm really proud of doing and would love to do more of it. But I think I've realised that you need to find something that aligns with who you are, and to not let go of that as we face a crisis. Like, you can't let go of the things that you love. Something that I often reference was the climate Venn diagram designed by Dr. Jan Elizabeth Johnson, who was one of the co-writers to a book called All We Can Save, which is an incredible book. But yeah, the three circles are like what you love doing, what you're good at doing, and then like what problem within climate and kind of movements is needed to be solved, like what needs solving. So, for example, for me, I love creating things and doing art, and I'm also good at it, fortunately. And then a problem that needs solving within the climate movement and in creating a better future is that storytelling idea, getting people to imagine new worlds, getting people on board with your message. And so for me, when I put all those things together, I've kind of found my role within the movement that not only kind of fires me up and keeps me going because I love doing it, but is also really vital. You know, I can use my skills as an artist to create flyers and posters or graphic design for social media and stuff to get people to protest at the right place in the right time. Or I can use my art in a more personal way to communicate kind of emotional side of the climate crisis, which I also think was a great, you know, one of the reasons this play is great, because it touches on that as well. So like, there are so many different ways to use art in that sense. Something that I find really satisfying is that in my town last year, during the period of time where lots of people were protesting the police crime sentencing and courts bill, so under the banner of Kill the Bill in the UK, I designed, along with someone else, a poster, and some other people in my town went out and fly posted that. And what I really love now is that all around my town, even though it's been like a year, you can still see like the faded posters, which are up on like lampposts and stuff. And to me, that's really like a powerful reminder that like we've left our mark and people can be reminded around our town that something happened, and that, you know, they wouldn't have that reminder if art wasn't a part of it. So like, it seems like something small, but actually when you put it all together, like actions and movements can't progress without art being a part of it. And so that's kind of my message to other artists, is like, you have a skill that is very powerful, and we can't actually do a lot of the stuff we need to do without you. You know, we need to make movements enticing. We need to be able to create visions for the future so people actually know what they're fighting for. So yeah, I think I feel a lot more comfortable in accepting my role as an artist now, rather than feeling the pressure to do like everything, which I've done in the past. And so now I'm like, okay, my role as an artist, if someone needs me for that role, I will be there and I'll do it.
And Dawn, I wonder if you could tell us a bit about what made you as a playwright start to really focus on the question of the climate crisis, because I know it's a theme that runs across quite a bit of your work.
Yeah, I think I've been interested for a while. I used to be married to somebody who worked for Greenpeace for quite a long time, so I had kind of a one foot in that world, and I went on a lot of protests and I was part of that, and I'm also from the countryside, so I feel like that's quite an important part of my identity. My relationship with nature feels like it's very majorly important in my life. And I'd kind of known for a while that I was probably going to write something about it, but I think I was kind of holding off because I knew that if I really looked at it properly and if I really engaged with it, then I would never be able to have not done that. And so I was a bit nervous about doing that. But when I decided to do it, writing this play has really changed me. So I'm really glad that I did. And now I feel like the climate emergency is going to be part of everything that I do and everything that I write. I don't mean that means I'm going to write loads more plays that have the climate crisis as the subject, but I think it's always going to be part of my work because I'm making art in this world and this world is facing the climate crisis.
Tell us what brought you to writing the trials, Dawn.
I was sitting at home booking flights to New York and writing some poetry, and I realised that it was the day of the first school strike for climate in the UK, and I'd meant to go to support the young people, but I'd forgotten and I was sitting at home, and I thought to myself, you think you're so green and you're such an arty liberal, but in the future people like you will be judged just as harshly as everyone else because you're not really helping right now. You're booking these flights to New York, you're actually part of the problem. And then I thought to myself, well, that's an amusing idea, you know, that in the future a jury of young people might be judging me. And I was like, yeah, it's a good idea. It's a good idea for a play. So that's kind of where it started from. So it wasn't from a position of me pointing the finger at other people. In fact, like, I don't think I could have done that because, you know, that would have made me kind of a hypocrite, really. So it's only by kind of including myself in it that I felt able to kind of go forward and write something about this subject, because I definitely don't have the answers. I'm definitely not perfect, you know. I don't pretend to be, but I also feel like with this play, I've asked the question of myself, and the question is being asked of everybody involved in it and everybody in the audience, which is, what are you doing and how are you going to feel in the future when you're asked, what did you do?
I've heard our artistic director, Mike Longhurst, say that it's a play that once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And it really lingers long in the memory. So I think I can reflect on that your impetus for starting to write it, it's already reading amongst the audiences who have come to see the previews so far. So I hope that bodes really well.
Something I think that this play touches on really well is the difference between knowing and believing. And I think that that is actually like a line from the play. I think basically a lot of people today know about the climate crisis and they know that it's happening, but they don't actually believe it, or they don't believe what its effects will truly be. And they can't quite wrap their mind about it and comprehend it. And in this play, you see the young people, they understand it, they're living it. And the older people who are in the trials, they are using it as their defense that they didn't understand. And the truth is, they probably should have understood because it was happening around them, but they didn't want to, and they were stopping themselves from comprehending it. And I see this a lot with my peers even, and I think people often talk about young people as extremely climate conscious and aware of everything that's going on and willing to talk about it and have these conversations. And whilst I think that there are a lot of people I know who are like that, there are also a lot who aren't and who don't quite understand this. And if I bring it up, they want to be like, no, but I want to believe that people will change stuff without me having to do anything. And if I talk about, oh no, but this is what's going to happen in 10 years, this is what will happen in 20, there will be an influx of refugees. If I get into those kind of details, people shy away from it, they get a bit scared, they don't want to have that conversation. And I think it's all around us at the moment with these heat waves that are going on. I think that we can't look at these without talking about the climate crisis and how these are only going to get worse and they're only going to get more extreme. And I think that this is something that people still can't quite comprehend. Mm. And we really need to start letting ourselves believe that climate crisis is happening all around us and not just viewing it as some scientific thing happening in the background of our lives.
I wonder if I could draw this conversation to a close and ask you all to think about what one thing you might invite our listeners to take away or to change or to do differently after today's conversation. How can we all be agents for positive change in the future? I'm going to start with you, Tolly.
I think for me, something that I've realised is really important to do, just having more time to yourself to imagine what you want in the future. Like, I just really don't think we do it enough. Like, I reckon most people listening haven't even, like, given themselves 2 minutes to think, I'm going to close my eyes and imagine what the future might look like if, like, everything was how I wanted it. And we're all going to have very different kind of ideas for what that will look like. But when we pull those ideas together and when we start having those conversations, we can create a much clearer vision for what we can build towards. And we can't do that if we don't start giving time to it. If you're listening, like, after this podcast, like, take a moment to just be like, what do I want the future to look like once we've achieved climate action and climate justice? Like, do I want more time to spend just existing as a human rather than working? Do I want to be able to hear more birds in the sky than planes flying over? Do I want to be able to work in an industry that is helping the planet? Do I want people to have fairer jobs? Like, just anything that comes to mind, like, is valid and can be something that we can build towards. You just need to, like, give yourself time to actually, yeah, like, close your eyes and imagine it. I think it can be a really powerful thing to do.
That's brilliant. Thank you. And Anjali, I wonder what your one takeaway might be.
I think mine is probably to have those difficult conversations, to actually think about what the reality of climate change is and not shy away from it, and just allow yourself to kind of imagine this future, as Tolly was saying, but what it will end up looking like if we don't do stuff now.
Thank you. And Dawn?
I think that these young people, I just think that they're so inspiring, and they've really said the most important things. I think what I feel for me is, you know, we all have to act out of hope, and that is really, really important. So definitely taking a positive step and thinking idealistically and not giving into despair, because there is hope. We don't live in my dystopian future. We live in a kind of semi-dystopian present, and we still have the power to make change, not just for a sort of distant future, but also for a much more immediate future and for our present. You know, we can make the world better. Thank you, both of you. It's just been astounding, and you are an inspiration. I mean, like I hate all of that shit, but you are inspiring.
I feel like it's okay to hear people say you're an inspiration if that person is also doing stuff. So yeah, like, okay. I accept it, and also inspired by you.
Thank you. Yeah,
the play was amazing, and I really, like, it was such a powerful watch. Like, I won't forget that for a very, very long time. I won't forget it at all, honestly.
Well, I'm so grateful to all of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And keep doing all the brilliant work that all of you are doing. We all need it. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you to our guests for joining our conversation today. And today was the final episode in our Climate Conversations podcast series. Please follow the Donmar's social channels to keep up to date with our ongoing Climate Conversations research as we test ways to support more climate-careful production making. My huge thanks to Zoe Svensson, our associate artist and climate dramaturg, for curating this whole podcast series. It was produced by Heather Passfield, with support from Josh Parr and Daddy Allen for the Donmar Warehouse. Audio recording by Ed Bordney, Simon Hendry, Max Hunter and Keegan Curran, with audio editing and mixing by Ed Bordney. I'm Claire Slater, Head of New Work at the Donmar. Thank you for listening.